This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. The show is brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit www.mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and solutions. And we thank them for partnering with Tech Central to bring you these great interviews. My guest in the studio today is none other than Altron's Group Chief Technology Officer, Bongani Andy Mabaso. Andy, welcome to the show. It's good
thank
to see you again.
Yeah, well. Nice to see you. Yeah.
You well?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
Very good, very good. Now, Altron has become one of the first companies in South Africa to deploy what's termed an AI factory. This is a fairly new term, and I think NVIDIA actually coined the phrase, if I'm not mistaken. And this AI factory that you have built in South Africa is powered, in fact, by NVIDIA hardware and software. And you've also partnered with a number of companies, including Asus and HPE, to deploy this infrastructure. Let's start with brass tacks here. What is an AI factory?
Firstly, thanks for having me on the podcast again. It was actually coined by Jensen himself. I think it was at the GTC in 2023.
This is Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA.
And I think he was trying to just make it easier for people to understand, you know, what is this AI infrastructure? How can we apply it? So the analogy goes, you know, a car factory manufactures cars. If you go to a packaging and beverage, you know, kind of plant or factory, you're packaging drinks, etc. So in an AI factory, you are manufacturing intelligence, albeit artificial, but it's still intelligence. And what are the raw materials? Well, it's data and some algorithms. And out of that comes some entity that has, you know, some level of intelligence. So that's the analogy that you know, that people generally go with. And we adopted that because I think it's just well known and people can relate to it. That intelligence, I always say, is not a tertiary output. You still have to apply it to some application. So one example that everybody knows would be like an Anthropic Claude or Google's Gemini or ChatGPT, et cetera, from OpenAI. That's an example of an application of the intelligence coming out of an AI factory, right, in the form of a chatbot. But you can actually apply it to many other use cases. Mm-hmm. It could be applying it in a call center environment. It could be applying it for document automation, et cetera. I mean, okay. The use cases are endless.
So is the idea then that this factory is used to train AI models, or is it more for the application of AI? So in other words, you know, we hear about OpenAI and Google and all the rest of them training these new models and requiring huge data center infrastructure. Yes. Obviously, that's done on a scale that we can't even imagine in this country.
Yes.
These are very large language models. Are you going to be doing that on a smaller scale here with customers who want to build their own 100%, models as well?
100%. So the AI factory actually allows the entire AI lifecycle. So from how do you process data, transform it, and even create synthetic data, that's, you know, still within the distribution of the input set. We also do model training. Mm-hmm. So we've got the entire software stack to allow people to do their own model training. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you need to do a lot of work to make sure you've got the right data sets, they're labeled if they require labeling, they're in the right format, et cetera. But we can't do that. What we see the most demand for, actually, with some of the early customers that we have, is for model fine-tuning.
Oh, yeah.
So because if you take a model like GPT-5 Pro and you try and apply that to a corporate context, it's typically overkill. Mm-hmm. That's a model that's trained on a large corpus, right, across the internet, et cetera. And it's a very general model. It's actually more efficient to use a much more specific model, a smaller model that's fine-tuned for a specific task. And so let's just say, for example, you know, one of the things that we're exploring is, you know, a bot that can help with responding to queries in a medical context. Mm-hmm. So the best way to do that is actually not to start with like a massive, you know, 1 trillion plus model, is to go to some of these smaller models that have been fine-tuned with data from a medical context, right, to have a conversational interface. And then with all of our data sets that we have on record, right, with those type of interactions, we can actually fine tune it so that it actually generalizes it well to our data set and to our context. Mm-hmm. So those are the type of examples that we see customers generally ask for in our environment. Yeah, and it's actually, it's fairly easy, actually. I mean, there's techniques like LoRa that you could use. You could, you know, retrain the entire model to, you know, to fine-tune it to your data set if you have a big enough data set, etc. And you can even just do prompt fine-tuning, you know, so don't change the weights, just really prompt it well, get the system prompts to really be specific to what it is that you're trying, what you're trying to do. So yeah, so that's what we we do. But it also doesn't stop there. We also do then the inferencing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because if you just do the training, that's probably not a lot of customers that will do that, although we have quite a lot of interest in that, but it's not the majority. The majority is in how do I use AI as a service? Mm-hmm. So can I get a model, or can you fine-tune a model for me that I can use to apply in a specific context in my business?
Is there a lot of demand from corporate South Africa for this type of solution right now, or is it still very early days?
So, yeah, it's an interesting question, and it's actually part of the reason why we embarked on this project.
Mm-hmm.
I spend a lot of time with customers. I mean, I've probably saw 50, you know, corporate customers in the last, say, 6 months or 8 months, just talking about AI and where they are in their journey. And the number one, well, there's actually two things that they all say. The first thing is we are all stuck on POC, right?
Okay.
You know, one of our marketing team members, Les, coined a term, POC purgatory. So it's actually her. I know she's ascribed it to me, but it's actually her. Where it's just like a whole lot of POCs, but they've not progressed into production and therefore making an impact.
Why is that? Why are people getting stuck?
I think people are solving for the hype.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of hype in AI, and hype is not something to be solved. It's something to be managed.
Mm-hmm.
What you need to solve is problems. Mm. So problems can be solved. Hype is to be managed. And so what people do is they come with these unrealistic expectations of what AI can do, and they go, can we do an experiment on that?
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't lead anywhere. The best use cases that we've seen that have actually progressed from being in POC and out of this POC purgatory are those that are solving a real business problem.
Mm.
Because the fundamentals of business have not changed, right? You're still trying to serve a customer. You know, you're trying to make the service or the product that you're giving to the customer better than the next guy. You're trying to do it as cheaply as possible, efficiently as possible, and you're trying to retain the customer, right? So the fundamentals of business have not changed. And so the thing to do with AI is, you know, and these are where the best use cases have succeeded, is how do I use AI, this new tool, to help me do just that, right? I call it making your beer taste better, as opposed to getting out of my way and losing focus on what my business goal is and trying to solve some hype-based, you know, kind of problem, because that doesn't exist.
It's hard to believe that the dot-com bubble was 25 years ago now.
Yeah.
Are we in another bubble?
Yes or no? Let me start with yes. Yes, in the sense of the hype. Mm-hmm. I think people, and let's be honest, right? Who does it benefit? Who does the hype benefit? I think it benefits the billionaires, right? The people whose share prices go up when
the guy's building these data centers.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I think there's a little bit of that. And look, you need some excitement to drive markets.
Of course. Because
if there's no excitement, no one invests, so you don't get R&D. So in a sense, it's necessary.
Mm.
But I think, yeah, there is a little bit of that tipping over to, okay, some of this stuff is actually never going to materialize, right? So I think in that sense, there is that issue. But like the internet, I mean, look where we are right now. Everything we're doing is almost unthinkable, right?
Yes.
Without the internet.
Yes.
And I think
what was promised in 1999 has actually happened. It just took a lot longer,
right? Yeah. Because people have to develop the literacy, the understanding of how do I integrate this new technology to help me solve my business problems,
yeah.
Right? So if you take Amazon, for example, and why e-commerce is such a big thing, it wasn't actually a new thing, right? To sell stuff is not a new thing.
Mm.
It's how do I do that, but leveraging this new technology, right? So I can reach more people. So I think people are starting to get to that point where they're starting to understand, oh, it's an enabler.
Mm.
It's one of the toolboxes that I can have in my toolbox. One of the tools in my toolbox that I can have. I don't have to use it all the time, but where I can and where it makes sense, then I should definitely use it. So I say, no, we're not in a bubble for that reason.
Mm.
I think that the speed at which people realize, you know, what I should do with it, I think is going to be a little bit faster than the internet.
It does feel like this hype cycle, to coined the Gartner phrase is moving a heck of a lot quicker than it did during the .com era.
I don't think it's going to slow down
either. So we're going to have a flash crash and then we're going to see the benefits very quickly.
Yeah, possibly. Who knows? It's hard to predict the future. Yeah,
exactly. So you've mentioned a few clients who are actually on this platform already, DataView, Lilapa AI, and Matthew.
Yeah.
Maybe just take us through what they're doing with this infrastructure that you've built and some of the things that they're producing.
Yeah. We have a lot more than that now, which is pleasing. Including our internal, opcos, et cetera, that are testing the platform. Mm-hmm. So DataView does a lot of data processing, and they needed a solution that helps them to parallelize that. And GPUs are effectively about parallel computing. And so how can they accelerate that, that work for their customers? So that's what they're doing. We've got customers like Lilapa AI that I think you know quite well, that are doing research in small language models in our local context. So language models that can speak isiZulu, Setswana, Sesotho.
Very smart stuff, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they're actually really great. I mean, they're one of our launch partners as well as being a customer. And the reason why I say that is, they're actually bringing IP, right? So they're actually using the platform more on the training side, the IP creation side of things, rather than the inferencing side of things. Like that will come in time. But right now it's about, okay, how do I leverage this newfound capability, this resource that's close by, to help me achieve my goals better. We also have Matthew, which is an education platform that seeks to help high school learners understand and learn maths a lot better. So not just in a generic way, but actually adapting to how the student actually learns. If you're a more visual learner, if you respond more to stories, the platform actually adopts, using AI.
The potential for education through AI is actually amazing. I was playing around just with the basics in ChatGPT, and it's got a learning mode that you can switch on. And, it's going to change the education.
It's incredible. It really is incredible, the potential. And particularly in our country where education is a challenge.
Yes.
I think, can you imagine?
Particularly in areas like maths and science.
Right, right. Imagine every single child having their own personal tutor that understands how they work. Mm-hmm. We talk about, the learning mode from Gemini and GPT, et cetera. Mm. But these are really specialized models, that are fine-tuned for education.
For our curriculum.
Yeah, exactly. Because the problem with larger models is there's also hallucination.
Yes.
There's also things that can go wrong, right? Yes. And so I believe in efficiency. I'm an engineer. So mm-hmm. the more efficient and kind of fine-tuned something is, the better. And it's generally cheaper and more performant anyway. Mm-hmm. So,
take us through what's involved in building. I know you're doing this on a fairly limited scale compared to what you're seeing with Stargate and some of these initiatives in America. You're hosting inside Terraco, which is obviously the country's largest data center operator. What is involved. I presume Terraco provides a lot, if not all of the infrastructure you need to support this.
Correct.
But I know that these workloads and these chips that are inside these facilities are very power hungry.
Yeah.
What's actually involved in putting this infrastructure on the ground, and how much power do you have to wheel into the Terraco data center to run all of this?
Look, it's a lot. I think people don't appreciate how powerful some of these enterprise grade or data center grade GPUs are. In fact, the limiting factor for most of them is VRAM, so how much memory the GPU actually has. To actually use up the compute is very difficult. So unless you have a really, really computationally intensive problem that you can somehow parallelize, most people struggle to kind of use all of it, which is what we found. So when we started the project, we obviously had to deal with all the import issues, right? It's not easy to get.
Oh, is it quite difficult to get them? Because I remember Biden era, they were talking about limiting the amount of GPUs that could be exported to markets. I don't know if that
impacted us.
That did impact you.
Yeah,
okay.
That impacted us.
So it's difficult to get the stock to build the stuff.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Now the lead times are crazy, and obviously the costs as well. So we're lucky that we have Ultron Aero, so we actually use them, and they just went to everybody and knocked on everybody's door until they could secure us some kit. So that was fantastic. And funny thing, we actually had to ship it disassembled and assemble it ourselves this side, because if you had to do it, because normally how they do it is they assemble the whole server rack and then you just have to stack it.
Yeah.
Would have added another 12 weeks to the lead time.
Oh, wow.
And so, just because of that, we then learned how to assemble in a factory, which is a
good learning time.
Yeah, exactly. A great byproduct. So that's how we did it. quite a lot of time to assemble it together, test all the components, make sure that they actually work, there's no broken parts, etc. So we had to deal with things that I suppose most people wouldn't have to ordinarily deal with. And then once you're done with that, then you've done all your hardware tests, then it's all the software installation, mm-hmm. right? And that takes actually the longest amount of time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that took us, several weeks just to get that
right. So this is the NVIDIA CUDA software?
Correct.
That runs the whole thing?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. It's not just CUDA. I mean, it's the entire enterprise software stack. So from your operating system base images to installing the Kubernetes layers to the base command manager that NVIDIA provides to help you manage all of that and so many other pieces of software. So that was the longest amount of time to test all of that, make sure that it works, et cetera.
When we think of NVIDIA and AI, we always think of the chips and the hardware that's going to these data centers, but NVIDIA is actually a very big player in software as well, and people don't realize that actually one of its big strategic strengths is the software it's built to run this stuff.
Yeah, I think Jensen himself says like, they're actually a software company that does hardware. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, all of us, we kind of think of them as a hardware company, but they actually do a fair bit of software.
They actually don't make their own chips.
Yeah. Well, they design them and then they ship them off to
TSMC.
TSMC. To actually, manufacture
them. Same as Apple and AMD, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. So, once you've built this, does it require special cooling? What's actually involved in keeping this thing running properly?
Yeah. So this is why we partnered with Teraco, because they're already a NVIDIA DGX ready data center. So they're certified to run NVIDIA equipment, mm-hmm. which means from a cooling, power, redundancy, all of that is taken care of. And that's why we decided to do that. We did not want to figure that out ourselves.
Right.
And so all the cooling and all of that, I mean, Jan and his team have already figured out, which is great. And I believe the newer data center that they've just released also does, liquid cooling as well, which we're obviously very, very keen on as we expand our solution. So that's why we partnered with Teraco.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So you've also partnered with Asus and HPE. Asus, I think, was distributed by Ultron Aero, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. So what have those companies provided to the equation?
Yeah. So we'll start with Asus. They are, so I think Ultron Aero is the sole distributor for Asus in the country. So for GPUs, et cetera, all the AI-optimized infrastructure. So they provided that for us, which is, we were really grateful for. The lead times that we quoted were quite large, but mm-hmm. we're really glad to have, met with some of the senior VPs, cut a deal and got them, down sooner. So they were a great help. HPE has assisted in some of the software, stacking, just to help us with some of the automation, onboarding of customers, et cetera.
Okay.
So they've been fantastic in that regard.
So do they manage access to the compute resource and bill accordingly? Or
No. We do that ourselves, but they just helped us to kind of put that all together.
Okay.
We needed a solution that would work off the shelf. To help us to do that. Yeah.
Okay. You guys obviously do the billing, but the software helps manage
access
to the system.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. So that's the software has to do the metering, understand how much usage you've done, et cetera. Yeah. And then we can connect it to our billing system so that we can actually send you an invoice. Yeah.
Okay. And are your clients free to do anything on the hardware that they want to, or is it limited in terms of the AI workloads they can put onto it?
No, actually, you can run whatever you want to do.
Whatever you want.
We do have terms and conditions, obviously, so you can't, we're still a business.
Don't do anything illegal with it.
Yeah, don't do anything illegal with it and that. So there are terms and conditions. But besides that, you can do whatever you want. It's been quite nice, actually, having customers that can literally just do, they can do it on their own. They understand the NVIDIA environment, the software stack, and they can just come in and just start training. And then you also have another customer that's just like, I don't know how any of this works. You just give me an endpoint, an API endpoint. Mm-hmm. And when I pull that endpoint, intelligence must come back. I don't care how you do it. give me the SLA and I just want to go ahead. And then you also have other customers that want you to build a solution, a full end-to-end solution for them, right?
Okay.
Which is where obviously our IT services division comes in. Speaking of that, I mean, we've invested a lot of money in training our teams, mm-hmm. especially our IT services teams. We have over 60 certifications now with NVIDIA. Mm-hmm. And we had most of them done classroom-based, as in they bring an NVIDIA-certified instructor, you do the training, you write the exam, you get the certificate at the end. So that's how much investment we've made. And the reason for that was we wanted to be able to assist customers all the way from those that want to, you know, transform data, train their own models, fine tune, you know, inferencing, or just, you know, prepackage a solution and just give it to me. You know, we wanted to be able to help them across the stack.
Yeah, I was going to ask how many skills we have in this space in South Africa, and are you seeing a lot of programmers and tech skills?
Yeah.
What's the word? Re-skilling themselves for this AI era. Is the talent out there in South Africa?
The talent is actually out there. I think the challenge has always been access. Mm-hmm. So if you are working in an enterprise, you know, how do you get access to some of these advanced tools? Yes, obviously they're hyperscalers and they're, you know, a lot of them are partners. And so they've got some tools that have made it easier to consume AI. But if you're talking about some of the more fundamental work that we are dealing with now, right, where customers want to train or fine tune their own models, where could you do that? Right. It's always been a challenge of access. You could go to the cloud somewhere and get some international marketplace, but that comes with costs, regulatory challenges, you know, performance issues from a latency perspective. So we believe that with this platform now landing in the country, and I believe there will be many others that will come, right? I think it will stoke the fires of the AI ecosystem. So I would love to see universities getting access to the platform and actually training students, right, for their final year, graduation, the thesis and their master's and their PhD thesis. Here's a platform that you can use right here to enable you to do some fundamental research and then kind of going all the way up. So we've been amazed by the amount of skilled and talented people, especially in the startup scene, that are building something in AI that have just been lacking access to the right platform.
Out of interest, is this AI stuff going to remain mainly cloud-based? I know it's largely cloud-based at the moment just because of the huge upfront cost in investing in the sort of equipment, but we also know the trend of Moore's Law.
Yeah.
The stuff that we're doing in the cloud now, in these AI factories and in these massive data centers, am I going to be able to do this on my desktop in 10 years?
Yeah. you can. You just can't serve 1,000 customers in parallel from your desktop.
Right.
But you can kind of run anything from your desktop today. Mm-hmm. And that's the differentiator. To that question, and we actually have three deployment models. So the first one is platform as a service. So if you're just coming in and just want an end-to-end MLOps platform that can allow you to do everything from ingesting your data, training, inferencing, et cetera, we give you that. We also have an AI as a service deployment model where I don't care about the platform. Just give me an endpoint and, you know, give me the intelligence that I require. But we also do custom deployment. Mm-hmm. So quite a few of customers have come to us and go, okay, this is fantastic. I can come in and test it in your environment.
In my house.
But I want it in my house, right? If you're a large corporate, maybe you're dealing with really sensitive data.
Like a bank.
Exactly, right? There's no reason why you can't have your own sovereign AI factory for yourself. So I believe, you know, having been a CIO at a bank, that this will be part of the stable of the enterprise IT stack in the next 3 to 5 years. It's just, it seems logical to me, right? You know, you've spoken about Moore's Law.
So it'll be a mix of cloud and on-premise, is that what we see today?
Correct, yeah. You know, because you want, especially with this huge volumes of data, you want the processing of that data to happen as close as possible to where it is stored. When there's distance, you bring other issues, latency, security challenges, et cetera. So you can have those challenges as well.
Okay. And having an AI factory in South Africa as opposed to, say, hosted in some data center in Delaware.
Yeah.
obviously, latency is a big one. Data sovereignty. Are there any other advantages in...
Yeah, so I think those two are very prominent. The third one is local support. Okay. The fact that you are able to just call me and we can kind of deploy the resources to assist you with whatever the challenge is. Mm-hmm. It's not that you can't do that. I mean, there are many, companies that have, gone to Delaware and just deployed their models there. But when things go wrong and you have to raise a ticket and you have to wait in line with, 1,000 other customers, that's when, the challenges start to arise. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to make sure that support is local, that we can be much more responsive.
Which is important for local corporates.
Correct. Exactly. Local corporates kind of want that responsiveness. That ability to give an SLA as well is quite an important thing. Mm-hmm. part of the reason why we chose a co-location partner like Teraco is a lot of our customers already co-locate their yes. solutions there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not even a matter of latency. It's like Jan just has to get his team to take a fiber optic cable from our rack all the way to your rack. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm simplifying, but sure. but you get what I'm trying to say. So that's been one of the things that has been a selling point mm-hmm. for our customers.
Okay. Just lastly then, obviously we've seen this massive investment going on, particularly in the US in AI data center infrastructure.
Yeah.
And who knows whether it's being overdone or not. I guess we'll know in a few years' time.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a similar race to build AI infrastructure here in South Africa? You mean, you've mentioned this is very early days.
Right.
You're one of the first in the market to build an AI data center. Is this the start of a crazy investment cycle in this market as well, do you think?
That's a very good question. Potentially, but I think likely in the next 3 to 5 years. Like I said before, I think people are still trying to figure out how do I apply this intelligence to help me with my own business problems, right? So I think that's where corporates are, right? It's trying to figure that out. I think once that happens and it becomes mainstream, the standard CIO has a literacy around AI and they're comfortable around AI factories, I think there will be a need for more data centers, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
As to whether that's absolutely right now, it's always a guessing game, mm-hmm. right? It's, you're trying to time the market. I think it's always
a dangerous
game.
And it's also just trying to figure out how big AI and how important AI is going to be
correct.
In business in
correct.
5 years from now, which no one really
yeah, yeah, exactly. So, that's actually part of what we've done, right? Is, mm-hmm. The partnerships that we have, with NVIDIA, with Asus, HPE, et cetera, we've secured supply, logistics, et cetera, so that the next time we build an AI factory, it's way quicker,
mm-hmm.
right? So obviously we've gone through the process now and mm-hmm. it's taken however long it's taken, but we've built it to the right architecture, it's scalable.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can scale like that,
okay.
Which is what-
So you just put new racks in.
Yeah, exactly, right? Mm-hmm. We can scale up and be able to take up the demand. I think we'll know that we need to, invest more when the demand starts to outstrip the supply that we have.
Okay. Yeah. Seems like a sensible way of going about it. Bongani Andy Mabaso is Chief Technology Officer at Altron Group. I'm Duncan McLeod for Tech Central. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.